Welcome to the Right Take Podcast, news, ideas, and conversations at the intersection of politics and culture, a project of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. I will be your host, Mark Tapson. Welcome back to the Right Take Podcast. I am your host, Mark Tapson. Thanks so much for joining me here at the intersection of politics and culture. My official title at the David Horowitz Freedom Center is the Shillman Fellow on Popular Culture, which means that the focus of my work tends to be the intersection of politics and culture, which, as you all well know, is the phrase that describes this podcast. And American culture, usually, if not always, means pop culture. Now, people often think of pop culture as something shallow and ephemeral and not especially important in the grand scheme of things, especially compared to politics, an arena which has a very serious impact in our lives. But for better or worse, the trends and stars of pop culture have a greater impact on our lives than many people realize, especially the lives of young people who absorb a significant number of their attitudes and beliefs and values from the pop culture that they swim in from earliest childhood. And then those young people go on to become the next generation of adults, of course, bound together more than we would like to admit or think about in ways that shape the direction of our country and even our civilization. Having grown up in the 1960s, which was the decade in which pop culture really hit its stride, so to speak, I can attest to the power of pop culture to shape young people's entire worldview and language and even values. Pop culture is not a shallow, insignificant arena of our lives, unfortunately. The left realized this even decades before the 1960s, and a good half century before conservatives began catching on and realizing that we had to catch up to get in the game. If the left didn't believe pop culture was a critical battleground to control, they wouldn't have spent so many decades establishing a beachhead there and proceeding to steer it in the direction of their agenda. This is why Hollywood and the music biz and the theater world and the news media, all of it, are utterly dominated by woke progressives. And it's why conservatives and Christians have been utterly marginalized in that field. It's why our pop culture today is a cesspool of transgressive, godless values and what I would call literally demonic. I'm not joking when I say that our culture, our pop culture, needs an exorcism. Now, I say all this as a kind of a prelude to the conversation I'm about to have with my guest at the Right Take, a man who has spent about 40 years or so embedded, shall we say, in the entertainment industry, and who is carving out his own path in this wasteland and doing great work creating content for the vast number of Americans out there who are underserved by mainstream Hollywood and who are hungry for uplifting, meaningful, hopeful family entertainment that doesn't assault their values and their senses. Americans who want their culture back, their country back. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this conversation. And let me say, as always, please take a moment to subscribe to The Right Take if you haven't already, so you can keep up with the conversations that we are having here with important thinkers, writers, pundits, scholars, and storytellers. And if you like what you hear, a positive review would be greatly appreciated. Thank you, and don't touch that dial. My guest today at The Right Take is actor, producer, director, author Kevin Sorbo. Everybody knows Kevin from his days on the hit TV show Hercules. It was the most watched show in the world for like 7 years. But he's had an incredibly prolific career beyond that. His list of acting credits is as long as my arm. And that kind of longevity in Hollywood is no small achievement, especially for a political conservative. And we're going to talk about that and about the state of the culture and what he's doing to change it. Kevin Sorbo, welcome to the Right Take Podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. I'm very excited to have you on. There's a lot that I would like to talk to you about. I know you're a very busy guy, so I'll get right to it. Let's begin with politics and Hollywood. Were you always politically conservative, or did that outlook develop later in life? And at what point did your conservatism become an issue for you in your career?
I've always been conservative. Actually, I grew up in Minnesota. My parents were Walter Mondale and Hubert Humphrey Democrats. We all know where Minnesota is now. Minnesota is as bad as California with its politics now. And first time I could vote was 1980, and I voted for Ronald Reagan. I looked at Jimmy Carter, and I said, wow, this guy is one of the worst presidents this country's ever had. And I was right until Obama, and then, of course, Biden came along. So my parents were sort of beside themselves, but, you know, they grew up, you know, in just in farms in Iowa. They were always just Democrats and always just kind of pushing that agenda. But, yeah, I've always been there with that, you know, even in Hollywood, when I moved there in mid to late 80s, I didn't hide from the fact where I stood politically because it wasn't that big a deal. Yeah, you know, the Dems in Hollywood, it's majority liberal. But, you know, before the 1960s, Hollywood was majority conservative. And, you know, they give me a hard time. I give them a hard time. Fine. Everybody moved along. Well, as you know, in the last 12 to 15 years, things have really accelerated and changed drastically thanks to Hollywood's movies and TV shows and the mainstream media. And so I got the boot. I think I'm the first cancel culture victim, actually, before it became a term, when 10 years ago, my manager and agent said we couldn't work with me anymore. And I was like, wait a minute, you guys, I've always known I'm a Christian. You've always known I'm a conservative. I don't hide behind it. I don't run out and post stuff on Twitter all the time saying, you know, I'm better than you all. So it was just weird. And they said, well, the winds are changing here in Hollywood and we can't get you a job anymore. And I kind of laughed at it after being out there for, you know, 30 years. And so I went, okay, fine. So my wife and I formed Sorbo Studios. Through that, we're fortunate enough to raise money to do our own films. But most of the movies I've been doing are coming in from other independent production houses that don't mind me being conservative. So I've been shooting, my gosh, I've been shooting at least 3 to 4 movies every single year the last 10, 11 years. And nothing's changed this year. I've already shot 2. I got 3 more lined up. And, you know, I'm just going to keep on doing what I'm doing. And I just want to do movies that Hollywood used to do, movies that have a good message instead of a negative one in them.
That is awesome. And if you had done what a lot of conservatives have been kind of forced to do, and that's kept your political beliefs under wraps, in theory, that would have made it a lot easier to get along and go along and kind of smooth the path of career success. But you didn't do that. You actually took the path of greater integrity. And I'm guessing you don't have any regrets about that.
No. You know, what's interesting, Mark, I get every movie I've been doing, certainly since about 2016, 2017, I'll get at least one person, if not a dozen, during the filming coming up to me privately and saying, hey, thanks for being a voice for us. And I say, why don't you be a voice for yourself? This is ridiculous. This is the problem out there. You know, they've done such an amazing job. I mean, for decades, it was the gays in the closet. It's now the conservatives in the closet in Hollywood. And I'm just telling people, you know, forget about it. Who cares? Just don't be, you know, they're working on a movie with me. And I said, look, you're working on a movie right now that most of the people here are conservative. Not that that's who we try to hire. I don't care. I don't have that kind of anger or hatred towards somebody who's got a different political point of view. I'm amazed that so many people on the left are just angry all the time. And every day they wake up saying, well, what can I be pissed off about today? You know, that's kind of the way they live their lives. And what a horrible way to go through every single day. I mean, people have followed me on Twitter that go after me. I don't look at it. I mean, I'm up to 2 million followers now and I don't have the time. I just post stuff. And my boys will tell me, yeah, this person said this. And I said, you know what? I don't care what they say. It does not affect my lifestyle. These people have to live with themselves. Can you imagine every day looking in the mirror and hating yourself and then every day just waiting to pounce on people like me and you just to say something negative? What a pathetic existence these people have. So I could care less. They're the ones that got to live with themselves. I don't care what they do.
You mentioned Sorbo Studios. Tell us about that. You and your wife, Sam, who's a very dynamic person and talent in her own right. You guys launched Sorbo Studios, as you said. What is your mission there?
To make movies with a message, to make movies that have hope and love and redemption. And I'll say hope again. I think the biggest thing that the world is looking for right now, let alone America, I think the world's looking for hope. I mean, there's so much hate out there. There's so much anger. There's so much divisiveness every single day this goes on. And you see how corrupt our government is. I mean, America's government is as corrupt as any government out there in the world right now. And I tell people all the time, I said, think about this. We went to war against the British monarchy, back in the 1700s. Our government is worse now to our citizens right now in America than the British monarchy ever was towards us. And we're sitting around just taking it. It's like, oh, well, what can we do? So I've always said apathy is one of the biggest killers in the world right now because people just give up. They're afraid to speak up. And that's exactly what Marxism and socialism and communism is. It's just taking control. There's no more we the people. We are certainly a socialist country right now and going downhill every single day. So You know, we give the government so much control, so much power. Ronald Reagan said back in the early 1980s, we're only a generation away from losing our freedom. Well, here we are. And look at the, now they're just going after people. The thing they went after Trump for, are you kidding me? It's a misdemeanor that's already lapsed in terms of its time limit. And they want to put this guy in jail. And yet, meanwhile, we got the amount of, you know, we got people attacking people in subways here and raping people. We give them a slap on the wrist and go, please don't do that anymore. And it's just the weirdest thing. This, when are going to people wake up? And I'm here to wake up the lions. The sheep are going to be sheep. They're the ones in the airport still wearing masks. They're the ones that believe Fauci. I love when they say, trust is science. And I'm going, yeah, you question science. That's what science is questioning all the time. That's what scientists do. So I just thought it was pretty funny, the stuff that's going on right now. And we need to fight back. And people are afraid.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about, excuse me, let's talk about the culture war, because for Christian conservatives like you and I, these really are times that try men's souls. For many years, like a number of other conservative writers, I've been emphasizing the importance of reclaiming the culture from the left's death grip, because many conservatives are way more focused on politics, I think, at the expense of what's going on in the culture. But as the late, great Andrew Breitbart used to say, politics flows downstream from culture. So I've always emphasized the importance of Hollywood in shaping that culture, and I know you understand that very well. Of all the different fronts that we're battling in this culture war right now, like critical race theory in schools, the gender ideology, and so on, what issue do you think is the most important or urgent to address?
Well, I think there's two. I think education, number two, is abortion. You know, we're the left loves murdering. They love murdering. They love sacrificing babies. It's just, it's a sickness. And because of Roe v. Wade going through three generations now, people have just looked at it like having a common cold and getting rid of it with a pill. It's unbelievable what we've done in terms of, you know, we've killed, you know, over 65 million human lives. And we've killed these are deaths. These are human beings that we're killing. And think of the millions more that would have been born from those abortions done in the 70s and 80s and even the 90s. They'd have kids of their own by now. I mean, it's incredible what we've done. And our public education system is absolutely pathetic. We took the Bible out of the school in 1964, and we've been spiraling downhill since. You know, you don't have to be a Christian to look at and look at the book of the Bible and just go, you know, some pretty interesting stories in there. And the Ten Commandments, pretty good rules to live by. You don't have to be a Christian to believe in thou shalt not kill and thou shalt not steal and thou shalt not covet and all these kind of things in there. So to me, it's what we've done to the world and through public education, which ours is absolutely pathetic. We were number one in the world prior to the early 1960s. We ranked something like 27th or 28th in the world right now. America, 27th and 28th in public education. We got kids who don't even know about the World War I or World War II or know anything about the American Revolution. They don't know anything about civics, because we certainly don't want to teach kids that it's we the people. We want, you know, we want to just control their lives. And that's what big government does. Our forefathers are flipping in their graves for what's going on. And all these, and why is it every one of these senators, we need term limits, number one, but why is it all these senators going making, you know, they make $175,000 a year, whatever the pay is. Why do they all walk out worth tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars? Yeah, I mean, Pelosi, I mean, she should be in prison. I mean, you look at none of these people, she's worth like $190 million. Now, really? Come on, guys. When are we going to wake up and get these bozos out of there?
Yeah, I guess public service pays pretty well. Now, Kevin, I always say that the culture war is actually a civilizational war, because that's really what is at stake. And there's a question that I ask some of my guests, and I'd like to get your take on it. What is the culture war actually? A spiritual war.
Oh, we have a culture war as much as a spiritual war. There's no question. You mentioned Andrew Breitbart. He was a very dear friend of our families. I think there's more to his death too. I think there's an Epstein thing going on there as well. But that's a conspiracy theorist in me, because I lost 4 million followers on Facebook 3 years ago. I was posting the truth about COVID. Everything I said now, of course, has come true. And you know, guys like Fauci and Bill Gates should be in prison for what they've done to the world and what they're continuing to do. But it's unbelievable that we're just letting this, we're just letting ourselves just get run over again and again and again. And you got people out there that are, oh my gosh, well, yeah, okay. And you know, we're at a point now where you virtually have to work 7 months a year just to pay our taxes, but the government will let you keep the other 5 months. They're going to keep 7% of the 7 months of your year, because they know how to spend your money better than you do. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just incredible to me that people do not fight back. Wake the hell up. I mean, it's Look, you look at the last month, Pride Month. I'm going Pride Month. Have you seen the parades these people do? The sexual deviants. I mean, it's incredible what they do. And why does Pride get a month? Really? Give them a day. I don't care. I don't care people's sexual preferences behind closed doors. But marching down the streets and having oral sex like they do in San Francisco here recently, I've seen the videos. It's unbelievable. And shame on the parents for going to these things and clapping and supporting. How sick of a society have we become? Give them a day. They don't deserve a month. Our veterans deserve a month. Our vets do. Not 3% of the population that is LGBTQSQ, whatever all the alphabet that they want to use up. It's nuts what we're doing right now. I'm in the industry. I've worked 40 plus years in the business. I've had gay people on every single set I've been on. You won't find one that says I was horrible to them. I treat everybody the same. I joke with everybody. I have fun with everybody. You won't find one. Yet because I'm a Christian conservative, I'm a homophobe. Number one, I'm not have a fear of gay people. They don't fear. I don't tremble in their presence. Okay. I just think it's crazy what we've done and the brainwashing we've done of people because it's been very effective. There's a great bit from Harvey. Paul Harvey. Paul Harvey. You know who Paul Harvey is?
Yes.
1965 or 66, he said, if I were the devil, tell your listeners, go listen to that. This is 60 years ago. Okay. Paul Harvey, if I were the devil and what the devil would do. And it's like he was talking about the future and here we are. It's unbelievable.
Yep. I'm old enough to remember that. Are you optimistic then that
He was great.
Paul Harvey was. Are you optimistic then that we can reverse the decades of damage that's been wrought in America by these cultural Marxists? Because I feel like we're gathering momentum in this fight and that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. How does that feel to you? Because you're right on the front lines of that fight.
No, I agree. I think there's a tipping point. More and more people are waking up. More people are fighting back. More people are sick of what we're doing. This Trump derangement syndrome, whatever, it just cracks me up. I've always said, way before Trump ran, I've always said, we need a businessman to run America. It is a business. We don't need another politician. He got in there and just shook it all up. You know what's funny? Before he ran for office, before he announced it back in, 2015, early 2016, everybody loved him. All the, the Hollywood wanted to do cameos on TV and movies. And, he was giving money to both parties that we thought were good or whatever. And, once he announced, they just went after him every single day for 9 years. It's like water off a duck's back. This guy's amazing what he does. It's amazing how he fights back. He kills him by winning is what he does. And there's no way he lost the last. I am a voter fraud. I am an election denier. There's no way that Joe Biden got more votes than any other president in the history of America. Like look at this guy. He's a fumbling buffoon. And I feel sad for the guy, to be honest. He certainly has, he's got Alzheimer's and things going on. And yet they prayed him out there because he got Obama and other people pulling the strings behind him. But it's just sad that, this last debate was just pathetic to watch. And yet he'll still get tens of millions of votes, but he didn't. There's no way he can win this next election without them cheating again. And that's what they do. They cheat. They just cheat better than the Republicans do. We need to get rid of mail-in voting. It's as simple as that. Get rid of mail-in voting. You show up the day of the election and you vote and show a bloody ID. It is not racist to show an ID card. I travel a lot. There's a lot of African-American people in front of me in line as we're going through customs or going through whatever else. They have IDs. It's shocking, isn't it? So it's like you need an ID to get a six-pack of beer, but to vote for the strongest position in the world, just vote as many times as you want and bring a couple dead people with you as well.
Yes. I love that you've been working hard to get the message out about reclaiming the right kind of masculinity in our culture, because I've been writing about that for years. I think the key to reversing our cultural breakdown lies in exactly that, reclaiming the right kind of manhood in an anti-family culture that demeans the very nature of boys and men as toxic. I went out recently and bought a copy of your children's book, The Test of Lionhood, and I read it to all my kids, my four girls who range in age from 4 to 14. I also have a son, but he's only a year and a half, but I'm looking forward to reading it to him when he's old enough. All the girls loved it, and as soon as we were done reading it, they immediately ran off with it to go play the games that you included in the back of the book. Tell us why you decided to do a children's book. You've done two, I think, now, but in particular, one that teaches boys some of the important virtues of manhood.
Well, you know, Kirk Cameron's a buddy of mine. He's with Brave Books. I'm with Brave Books now as well. BraveBooks.com. We're the two celebrities that are kind of endorsing the product because they do amazing work, amazing things. And their books are, you know, morally based, God-given based. You know, once again, you don't got to be a Christian to look at these things. It's just they have good messages, plainly good messages. They're not preaching in any way. They're just a wonderful way of, you know, trying to reach mostly 4 to 11-year-olds in it. So go to BraveBooks.com. In fact, if you sign up under my name, you'll get my book for free, and you get a discount on the year. There's a book every single month. I got very vocal about this. You know, my two older boys are 22 and 20, and they wear T-shirts saying "Embrace masculinity" or "Patriarchy is the future," and I love it. and you know, I just got tired of it, and I started going after all these wimpy men we got. We wimpified our men over the last, you know, four decades, and. There's nothing wrong with being a strong man. There's nothing wrong with that. It's very important for a mother and father in the family. It's as simple as that. You've seen all that. If you look at the Black community alone, 80% plus, 80% of Black kids raised in a fatherless home are in trouble. There's 8 out of 10 arrests, and a lot of them are incarcerated. A lot of them get involved with gangs. A lot of them get involved with drugs. A lot of them repeat that cycle. That's thanks again to LBJ, 1964, the Welfare Reform Act. What did it do? Hey, we'll take care of you, African-American woman. If you don't have a man in the house, we'll take care of you. We'll give you money for every child you have. Well, what's happened now? It's become a business within the Black community that a woman, by the time she's 30, has 4 or 5 kids from 4 or 5 different guys. And it's like, it's horrible what they've done, and what they did it on purpose to, you know, make sure that you keep voting for us and we'll take care of you. And that's what they're doing. And Brave Book contacted me and they said, you want to write a book about, you know, masculinity. I said, let's do it. Let's do a book about boys growing up to be strong figures within not only in the family as a father and a husband, but also as a, you know, strong pillar within the community. And I got attacked by the trans crowd and everything. I'm going, tell me how this book was anti anything. It's pro child. That's what it is. It's pro child. And my book that just came out in June here is called The Bare Essentials of Fatherhood. And it talks again, this is the importance of fathers within the family unit. That's what it is. That's all it is. And that's all what it's about. It just shows what fathers can do to be a strong influence on children's growing up. That's just, and there's nothing wrong with that. And yet you get attacked for that. Strange times. You know, you look at Black Lives Matter. What was their manifesto? Get rid of God, get rid of the church, get rid of the family unit. They said being pregnant is equal to slavery, which made me laugh. I'm going, okay, all you women stop having kids. And we don't have to worry about abortion anymore because in a century, there'll be no humans left on earth.
Well, about your take on masculinity, I love that you don't shy away from using the word chivalry, because I've actually been working on a book for years about chivalry, and I can tell you that it has become a dirty word among younger generations, because young women have been conditioned to think that chivalry is some kind of an oppressive patriarchal power play, and young men believe that chivalry aids and abets feminism by making men subservient to women. What does chivalry mean to you?
It means opening a door for your wife or your girlfriend, opening a door for somebody coming into a grocery store behind you, saying, excuse me, thank you, yes, sir, no, ma'am, being polite, you know, changing someone's tire if they need a change, helping somebody move if they need help me move, helping the elderly in whatever way you possibly can. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong by leading by example. And how many women want a wimpy man with them if they get attacked by somebody? Don't you think they'd rather have a Navy SEAL next to them? I would. I'm going to fight back. Trust me, I'm no Navy SEAL, but I'm not afraid. Now, look, we're loaded for bear in our house. Trust me, we're a Second Amendment family, and we go out and shoot a lot at ranges, and our house is fully loaded that if anybody ever tries to break in the Sorbo household, you know, we're ready. And my boys are, I'm a good shot. My wife's a good shot. My boys are really good shots. So, you know what? It's there to hunt, and it's also there to protect. And that was the reason for the Second Amendment. People forget that. They think it was just like, you don't need this or that to protect yourselves. The forefathers were brilliant. They put that in there because of a government running amok like our government is. Look, why are people not talking? If Trump had done this, it'd be in the news every day. There's been 2 times that I've actually seen on TV where Biden threatened the American people. He says, you think you're at guns? Hey, we got the airplanes. He threatened American people to attack them with our own weapons that were paid for with our tax dollars. Where's the uproar over that within the media? I cannot believe that all these left wingers, which 90%+ of all media and television and movies and whatever, I cannot believe behind closed doors, there's not one that says, holy crap, what are we doing? Guys, how long are we going to try to protect this and play this game? There's got to be one out of the hundreds of thousands of these journalists that is shaking his or her head and going, okay, this is not the right road to go on. But they're all afraid to come out. You know, they're afraid too to walk away from that tribe that they're in.
I can't even keep up with all the projects that you have been releasing lately and even ones that you have in the can. You have two films coming out just in August alone, I think, right? The Firing Squad and another one that addresses the current controversy over trans athletes and women's sports. What project do you most want to bring to people's attention right now, and what would you like for them to look forward to in the near future?
Well, we got August 2nd. It's going to be The Firing Squad. So go to firingsquadfilm.com. All kinds of information there, where the movie's playing and the trailer's there. It's a true story set in an Indonesian prison. I play an American that was a true story. It was an American that was down there surfing when he's in his 20s. He gets in a fight with a local. He kills him. He gets a death sentence in the Indonesian prison while he's in prison. This guy filled with nothing but hate and anger his whole life found God. He became a pastor. And before he was executed in 2015, so it's not that long ago, he became a pastor, and he saved a lot of lives, a lot of souls within there, not only other inmates, but guards as well. And August 30th, the Reagan movie comes out with Dennis Quaid. Dennis Quaid plays the president. I play his pastor when he was younger. So David Henry plays the younger Reagan when he was in his teens and 20s. So the movie opens August 30th, and a wonderful movie. I've got four of the movies in post-production right now. I have no idea when they're coming out. We can talk more about those in another interview. And then I've got three documentaries. Two will be out this year before Christmas. One deals, I spent 3 weeks in Israel through archaeological digs. We traced the flow of the Ark of the Covenant, and it's called The Quest for the Throne of God. And another one I got is a follow-up to one I did a couple years ago with Brent Miller's company, Ingenuity Films, and that was Before the Wrath. That was the number one documentary 2 years ago on Amazon. Check that out. Deals with the Second Coming. But the follow-up one we're doing coming out a week before Easter, probably a month before Easter, deals with the Last Supper, and it's called Eating with the Enemy. So maybe you and I should talk again sometime before Easter next year.
Oh, I'd be happy to do that. Kevin, what do you suggest that quote unquote ordinary citizens who are concerned about the state of the culture, but they're not in a position like you are to really move the needle of the culture? What can the average person out there do in their daily lives to help get our culture back?
Stop being afraid. I mean, fear is government's favorite weapon. You saw it played out in full force during COVID, right? So stop being afraid and just speak your mind. If you lose your friends, well, they weren't your friends to begin with. I still have liberal friends. We still give each other a hard time. We get along just fine. I've got atheist friends, agnostic friends, and we go golfing and have a good time. I mean, I don't harbor that, like I said, that kind of anger and hate. And my friends on the other side of the fence that are still my friends, there's other ones that have walked away for sure. They said, yeah, you're whatever. You know, we don't want to talk to you the rest of our lives. And I go, well, then you guys weren't real friends anyway to begin with. And they got to deal with their own insecurities and egos. But, you know, just don't let anyone set your limitations, especially yourself. And look in the mirror and make sure you like what you see, and just get out there and speak up your mind. And everybody's got social media. I don't care if you got 10 followers or 10 million. You can post things and say things. And if you're going to church, wake up your church. Remind your pastor he works for God, not government. And too many pastors are now woke. And they need to wake up as well, because this is crazy what we're doing. I think a lot of people go to church and it's just all lip service. And then, you know, they're afraid to really step out of that box and be honest about where they stand.
Yeah, I think telling the truth is, or speaking the truth is really where it begins for everybody, because that's a big step in our culture, in our cancel culture today. Just having the courage to speak the truth and to stand behind it, that's a good place for everybody to begin. So that's good advice. A related question is, how can people show support for Sorbo Studios and the kinds of projects that you are trying to bring to people?
Please sign up. SorboStudios.com is a great place to go. Sorbo, S-O-R-B-O, my last name, Studios. You should know how to spell that. And SorboStudios.com, and we have all kinds of stuff on there. It's my wife's and my site together. There's a place you can donate money to your favorite charity through us, or donate through the charity, one of our charities, or you can donate to our film fund. You know, I've been very fortunate to fund a couple more films for next year that I'll be directing and acting in both of them as well. And, it's been a blessing every time to raise enough money. I do my budget's in the 3 to 5 million range. I know people got a lot of money. Yes, it is a lot of money, but that's nothing in Hollywood, guys. If you look at a Spider-Man or a Superman or any of those movies, they spend $300 million on those movies and they have $100 million to advertise it. And we got to compete against that. So support the movies when they come out. Support the Firing Squad when it comes out August 2nd, because theaters don't care what they show. They want to sell popcorn and sodas. They don't give a crap what they show. So if you got an evil movie with a bunch of evil killing in it, it makes a lot of money. They'll keep that going. Unfortunately, too many people support those things. I do movies that will make you think. I call them actors' movies. I like doing true stories. And I'm going to keep doing that. So at Sorbo Studios, you can find all kinds of other, our books are on there, my wife's book, my books, our DVDs. If you want us, you want an autographed DVD, we'll send that out to you as well. So there's all kinds of stuff that you can reach out and help out.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, I think there is a huge underserved conservative audience. You know, the flyover country that the left likes to call us kind of condescendingly.
There's 80 million homes out there. 80 million homes out there, estimate of what people want us to do. Look, I don't get stopped because of Hercules or Andromeda anymore. I get stopped because of God's Not Dead, Let There Be Light, Soul Surfer, Miracle in East Texas. That's what people stop me for.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so I realize I'm going down the right road.
You definitely are. I think there's a real hunger out there for the kind of work that you're doing, and I'm just incredibly grateful that you're working to make that happen, that you're putting out so much content and bringing those kinds of stories to people who desperately need it. What about on social media? I know you said you were on Twitter. Is that a good place for people to keep up with what you're doing on a kind of a day-to-day basis?
Oh, yeah. At K Sorbs, K-S-O-R-B-S. K Sorbs is a good place to go. I'm on LinkedIn. You can find me there. You can find me on Facebook. I'm back on Facebook after 3 years, but I'd love my 4 million followers back. I'm just slowly building that up back up again. I'm on Truth, Donald Trump's social forum. So please check it out. On Twitter, I just post pretty funny, sarcastic truths. And I think people will get a kick out of it. So I hope people check it out.
Kevin Sorbo, thanks so much for coming to The Right Take. Keep fighting the good fight, sir.
Thank you. You too.
Listeners, check out Kevin Sorbo's projects at sorbostudios.com. And if you have kids or grandkids, check out his books for youngsters. Keep watch for his many latest films that are coming out. And thank you always for joining me here at the intersection of politics and culture. Don't forget to subscribe to The Right Take so you can keep up with all the important conversations we're having here. And if you like what you hear, please leave that positive review. Be seeing you. The Right Take with Mark Tapson is a project of the David Horowitz Freedom Center and Front Page Magazine. Unauthorized reproduction of this podcast without express written consent is prohibited.